You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostrecker of RavensWire, and we are back here with another Wednesday episode, and we are going to continue the series I started last week talking about a recap of the Ravens season, getting into each game individually for each segment. So we talked about the preseason as a whole, week one and week two last Wednesday. So this Wednesday, weeks 3, 4, and 5 are up on the docket, and weeks 3 and 4 can be a little sour for Ravens fans, as they suffered back-to-back losses where they got absolutely gashed on defense and sparked a lot of changes that head into week 5. So it actually all goes hand-in-hand pretty well, but so that's going to be on the agenda for us today. A lot of good stuff to talk about and a lot of memories to reminisce on for Ravens fans and myself alike. So let's get right into it. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, again, anywhere there is a podcast. We are right there waiting for you. Be sure to subscribe to us so you know that we release daily content Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at ChaosChecker34. After the Super Bowl, I have a surprise that is going to go up on my Twitter, and I think you guys are going to like it, so stay tuned for that, and be sure to keep it locked on with both the Locked On Ravens Twitter and my own personal. But now that that's all out of the way, let's start talking about the Ravens season recap, starting with week 3 here, and this is a game where the Ravens lost to the now defending AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs obviously going to the Super Bowl. The Ravens losing 33-28 in a game where Kansas City, the best second quarter team in the league, put up 23 points compared to Baltimore 0 in the second frame. And that's really where the Ravens lost the game. They were down 23-6 going into the half, 30-13 going into the fourth. But the Ravens ended up storming back, scoring 15 points in the fourth quarter compared to Kansas City's 3, but in the end, it wasn't enough. There was a huge play on a wide open pass to Chris Moore where he wasn't able to get both feet down in bounds, and there was a holding call late in that game that negated a big gain, and things just weren't breaking the Ravens' way in the end, and the Ravens suffered their first loss. They fell to 2-1 while the Chiefs moved to 3-0, and Lamar Jackson, in his 3 regular season losses, 2 of them have been Patrick Mahomes. And the Ravens wanted to get that revenge in the AFC Championship game, but they'll get a chance to get revenge on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs when they travel to Baltimore next season to play the Ravens at M&T Bank Stadium. Both of Lamar Jackson's losses have been at Arrowhead, which is a very tough place to play, but M&T Bank is a tough place to play in itself, so Mahomes will have to deal with the Ravens crowd this time. But talking about the stats, Lamar Jackson finished 22 of 43 for 267 yards, did not throw a touchdown, also did not throw an interception. He did score on the ground, though, having 8 carries for 46 yards and a touchdown. Mark Ingram had 16 carries for 103 yards and 3 touchdowns. This was the Mark Ingram game. Gus Edwards, 7 carries for 53 yards, and Justice Hill, 1 carry for just 1 yard. Nick Boyle led the team in receptions, 4 receptions for 58 yards. Mark Ingram also had 4. He had 32 yards. Marquise Brown, 2 receptions, 49 yards. Willie Snead, 3 for 47. Seth Roberts, 2 for 37. Gus Edwards, 2 for 15. Mark Andrews, only 3 receptions for 15 yards. And then Hayden Hurst, 2 for 14. This was a game for the Ravens on offense where, again, I mentioned Mark Ingram. This was, you know, his day to shine, but this was really the beginning of Nick Boyle, the receiver. Nick Boyle was signed to an extension by Baltimore to be a blocker. He's one of the best blocking tight ends in the league, and with Boyle, Hayden Hurst, and Mark Andrews, that automatically forms the best tight end room in the entire NFL. But you talk about receiving tight ends, and you think Mark Andrews and you think Hayden Hurst. Nick Boyle does a tremendous job blocking, but as the season went on, Mark Andrews kind of got banged up a bit, and the Ravens were kind of looking for people to step up as a pass catcher. Nick Boyle did exactly that, and he was able to really come into his own as a pass catcher, and this was really the game where he started to come on, and he hadn't caught a touchdown in all of his years in the league until the game against the New England Patriots where he had a touchdown score. But he's a guy who really stepped it up, and especially in this game for Lamar Jackson, had a couple of really, really, really nice catches to help them get back in this football game. His long was a 23-yard reception, and it was good to see Nick Boyle get involved in the offense this year, and I think this game for the Ravens and for Nick Boyle was his really coming out party for them. This was a game where Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews didn't really contribute. They combined for just 64 yards together, and that's something where, again, the Ravens need somebody who, if those guys aren't performing, if they're getting double-teamed, they will have to pay somewhere else. That defense will have to pay by single covering another guy. And right now, you know, Willie Snead didn't really move that bill. Seth Roberts didn't really move that bill. Hayden Hurst didn't really move the bill. Miles Boykin. When you look at a guy like a Henry Ruggs in the draft that Spencer and I talked about yesterday, when you look at a guy like AJ Green or Emmanuel Sanders in free agency, that's a guy where you have to double cover them or else they're going to get loose and they're going to be a threat. And that's not a knock on Snead or Roberts or Hurst or anybody. I think the Ravens had a very solid wide receiver room for what they had put together. You know, it was the Seth Roberts versus Michael Floyd debate in the preseason. And Seth Roberts came on and really did a good job considering the circumstances. Miles Boykin's learning. Hayden Hurst is learning. Willie Snead is a veteran who is an exceptional blocker, fits the Ravens scheme, and also has a good set of hands as well. No knock on those guys, but I think if the Ravens were able to bring in somebody who was really that third X factor on the offense, it's going to open things up deep. It's going to open up things over the middle. And so when you look at Lamar Jackson's 267 passing yards, he went 22 of 43. It's something where he's just over 50% completion percentage. But that's because the Chiefs took away Lamar Jackson's best weapon. And so I believe that if Lamar Jackson had a Henry Ruggs, AJ Green, Emmanuel Sanders, he would have been able to beat this Chiefs team at Arrowhead. But the main reason why the Ravens weren't able to go into Arrowhead and steal a win was because of that defense. And this was the first of two games where the Ravens gave up over 500 total yards of offense. And it was a rough one for this Ravens defense. Patrick Mahomes finished 27 of 37 for 374 yards, three touchdowns. LeSean McCoy had eight carries for 54 yards and a score. And this was a game where the Chiefs did not have Tyreek Hill or their top offensive lineman in Eric Fisher. Mecole Hardman had an 83-yard touchdown reception. He finished with two receptions for 97 yards and a touchdown. Travis Kelce doing Travis Kelce things, seven receptions for 89 yards. DeMarcus Robinson and LeSean McCoy also each had receiving scores. This was not a great game from this Ravens defense. They could not stop Patrick Mahomes. They could not get to him. They only sacked him one time. And Mahomes just carved them apart. Now, granted, Mahomes carved most defenses apart. But this was really the beginning of the end for a few Ravens players on defense, namely Kenny Young and Tim Williams and those guys. Kenny Young finished with seven total tackles. Tim Williams did not even make it on the stat sheet in this game. So, you know, it's safe to say that it was just a lack of experience for Baltimore. Again, losing those four defensive starters really took a toll at the beginning of the year. And plus having Earl Thomas come in and having guys like Tony Jefferson and having guys like Patrick Owusu who had the green dot. Inexperience was a key factor in this Ravens defensive struggles early in the year. But as we saw with the veterans who got brought in, as we'll talk about later, they really did a good thing for this Ravens defense. But the Ravens fall to the Kansas City Chiefs 33-28 in week 3, fall to 2-1. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about week 4, where the Ravens also took a loss to the Cleveland Browns. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. But before we do that, Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. Blue Chew is subscribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. It's at BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, and try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome back to the second segment of this Locked on Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher still with you here, and we just talked about the Ravens week 3 loss to Kansas City, and now we have to talk about another one, the Ravens losing to Cleveland in Baltimore 40-25. This was a game where, yeah, the Ravens lost to the Chiefs in week 3, but everything was going to be all right. The Ravens were going to go home, play the Browns really well, and really blow them out. Not the case. In fact, the complete opposite happened. The Ravens looked flat-footed. It looked to be another case of the Ravens playing down to their opponent, and the Browns took advantage of the, again, experience on the Ravens defense to the tune of another game where the Ravens defense gave up over 500 total yards. In terms of stats in this one, we can start with the offense. Lamar Jackson finished 24 of 34 for 247 yards, three touchdowns, and two interceptions. Now, when you look at those two interceptions from Lamar Lamar Jackson. They weren't his fault. One of them was tipped up in the air when Lamar Jackson's arm was hit, and the other one was a play where Jermaine Whitehead came over the top of Mark Andrews and committed pass interference. Now, was it obvious? No, but there was some pass interference in there. So both those interceptions by Lamar Jackson were not his fault. Mark Ingram finished with 12 carries for 71 yards. No touchdowns. Lamar Jackson had 9 carries for 66 yards. Gus Edwards, 6 for 28. And Justice Hill, 2 for 8. Willie Snead was the leading receiver for Baltimore with 2 receptions for 61 yards and a touchdown. Hayden Hurst had 2 for 39. Seth Roberts, 4 for 36. Miles Boykin and Mark Andrews each chipped in a touchdown, while Marquise Brown had 4 receptions for 22 yards. And then Nick Boyle, Justice Hill, Gus Edwards, and Mark Ingram also had receptions for Baltimore. And again, I talked about the Ravens needing another threat as a wide receiver. This was another game where Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews did not combine for a lot. Mark Andrews did score a touchdown, but 7 targets went to Marquise Brown and 8 targets went to Mark Andrews. You take into account Seth Roberts and his 5 targets, the rest of the receivers on the Ravens either had 3, 2, or 1 target, and only one of them had 3. 7 receivers on the Ravens had 2 targets or less for Baltimore, and that just shows that, yes, Lamar Jackson favored Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, but a guy who could take away the double teams on one of them, or if the defense was forced to go single coverage with that guy, it would go a long way for the Ravens. But this is a game where I want to focus on the defense for Baltimore, because this was a game where the Ravens were supposed to dominate, and Cleveland always seems to play the Ravens very tough. Baker Mayfield finished 20 of 30 for 342 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 interception. Nick Chubb just had a field day. 20 carries for 165 yards and 3 touchdowns. Dontrell Hilliard also had a touchdown. He had 6 carries for 27 yards, and then Baker Mayfield, 3 carries for 1 yard. Jarvis Landry, a field day for him as well. 8 receptions for 167 yards. Ricky Seals-Jones had 3 receptions for 82 yards and a score. His long was 59. Hilliard had 2 for 27. Odell Beckham was held in check by Marlon Humphrey. Only had 2 receptions for 20 yards on 7 targets. And then Farrell Brown, Nick Chubb, and Damien Ratley also contributing to the Browns receiving core. When you look at the Ravens defense, Earl Thomas led the team with 8 tackles. Patrick Owusu and Tony Jefferson had 6. Matthew Judon, 5. And then Patrick Ricard, Michael Pierce, and Kenny Young had 4 apiece. This was the beginning of the end for this Ravens defense as they knew it. After giving up, again, over 500 total yards of offense, you want to be exact, get 530 total yards. The Ravens were only able to muster 395 yards. Now, when you look at what happened in this game, there were a lot of ripple effects. And I'll start with the guys who were released after this game. And I'll talk about the guys who were brought in after this game. They parted ways with Tim Williams, and a guy who really did not live up to his potential in Baltimore. I loved Tim Williams coming into the draft, and when the Ravens selected him, I was ecstatic, but that was a miss from me, I'll admit it. And he's actually taken some jabs at the Ravens on Twitter. I know some Ravens fans have gotten into it with him, so wasn't the best parting of ways for Williams and Ravens fans, but he just wasn't able to put it together, couldn't set the edge very well, didn't get to the passer. He was a very good speed rusher in college, and really, he was one of the fastest rushers I had ever seen. If you go watch his college tape, he is just so quick, but it just didn't translate over to the NFL. The Ravens knew that they needed some help with both pass rushing and the inside linebacker core. I mean, you talk about what happened on that huge Nick Chubb run for the touchdown, which I'll talk about the ripple effect of that in a second. Kenny Young completely missed his gap. Patrick Owusu missed his gap. Tony Jefferson, who's a veteran safety, missed his gap. There was just a lot of communication issues on this defense, and the Ravens needed something to happen. They needed something to change. So what the Ravens ended up doing is they brought in Josh Bynes and LJ Ford after this week, and to say they made an immediate impact is an understatement. Now, we'll get into what they actually did for the team, you know, starting off with their stats in the next segment. But just the way this defense started to carry itself, they started to have a little more swagger. They started to look a little more sure of themselves. And then you talk about the green dot being moved over from Patrick Owusu to Chuck Clark. And the original plan was for Chuck Clark to really play some dime linebacker. And we'll talk about the injury to Tony Jefferson and kind of how that happened again in the next segment with the Steelers. But that was really a key point for them. First, starting off, getting Josh Bynes and LJ Fort onto this football team, and second, moving the green dot from Patrick Owusu to Chuck Clark. Now, the Ravens trusted Owusu, and he showed that he at least deserved a chance to have the green dot and be, you know, a leader on that defense, and he just couldn't put it together in a full-time role, and he was a great sidekick to CJ Mosley, and he was able to kind of play his game a little more, but he was asked to be, you know, a CJ Mosley, and that really wasn't his game. He couldn't live up to it, and really kind of lost his spot among the linebacker rotation as the year went on. And you mentioned a guy who lost his spot in the rotation, Kenny Young, barely played after this whole thing with Josh Bynes and LJ Fortin. We'll get into him next week as he got traded off from Marcus Peters, as we all know. But overall, this Ravens defense just had issues. And I talked about the Nick Chubb run, the ripple effects. Well, Earl Thomas pulled up on that run, didn't really give an effort to tackling him after Nick Chubb had blown by. And that didn't sit well with some Ravens veterans, particularly Brandon Williams, who actually did not play in this game because of an injury. And Earl Thomas and Brandon Williams got into a little bit of a spat after the game, and with Earl Thomas saying, well, why didn't you play? And Brandon Williams saying, well, why didn't you put in any effort? Kind of a back and forth, but they dismissed the issue. The two of them seemed to be fine. And, you know, sometimes it's just we'll agree to disagree. I don't think everybody gets along with everybody in the locker room on the team they're playing for, you know, in every circumstance. So that was just an issue where the Ravens were frustrated, they were mad, they were upset that they knew they could be doing better, and after two great wins in the early season, just to be battered down with two straight losses to teams that just demolished them, it was deteriorating to a locker room that overall over the years it had some very nice culture to it. And I'm not saying the culture was bad, but I'm just saying that you don't really hear about arguments like Brandon Williams and Earl Thomas had in the Ravens locker room. So that was something that was new to me and probably new to some Ravens fans as well. But the Ravens defense just wasn't able to get it done. And this was another game where the Ravens could not get to the quarterback. Baker Mayfield was only sacked one single time. And luckily, this was the beginning of the end for the Ravens defense. Luckily, Eric DaCosta was very proactive in his approach to fixing the defense. He went out and acquired some veteran talent, and it was really what propelled the Ravens on their 12-game winning streak. We are going to go to our final break now, but when we come back, we are going to be talking about the Ravens bouncing back against the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. But before we do that, we talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side of the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedon. Unlock content to help your focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedon. That's calm.com/lockedon. Welcome back to the final segment of this Locked On Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher still with you here, and we just got into a few losses, and it was a little tough to talk about, but now we're back on the positive track and talking about the Ravens' Week 5 win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Something that fueled their 12-game winning streak and was just the first step in the historic Ravens regular season in 2019. The Ravens beating the Pittsburgh Steelers 26-23. In overtime, the Ravens moved to 3-2, while the Steelers fell to 1-4. And considering everything, considering the 1-4 start for the Steelers, to come back and almost make the playoffs for that team was incredibly impressive and just another feather in the cap for Mike Tomlin in his coaching career. But let's look at the box score for this game, because it was a game that was very, very, very close. The Ravens were up 17-13 at halftime. The Steelers then scored a touchdown in the third quarter. Then the Ravens actually had to come back and kick the game-tying field goal to send the game to overtime. And then Justin Tucker, with help from Marlon Humphrey, secured the game with a game-winning field goal. Lamar Jackson was not his best day. In fact, you could probably say that it was his worst. 19 of 28 for 161 yards, one touchdown and three interceptions. Now, when you talk about the three interceptions, again, I only think one of these was really his fault. One of them, Devin Bush, caught it over Mark Andrews. It shouldn't have even been an interception. The ball clearly hit the ground. The one that was his fault was one right before the half, where he actually threw into coverage on his end of the field. Mike Hilton made a great play on the ball to pick it off and give the Steelers great field position. Mark Ingram had 19 carries for 44 yards and a touchdown, but it was actually Lamar Jackson who led the team in rushing yards. He had 70 yards on 14 carries. Gus Edwards had 5 carries for 17 yards, and Justice Hill, 2 carries for 7 yards. In terms of receiving, another quiet day for the receivers. Willie Snead led the team with 51 yards on 4 receptions. Mark Andrews had 5 receptions for 45 yards. Hayden Hurst, 4 for 32. Marquise Brown, 3 for 22 and a touchdown on an incredible catch. And he actually got hurt on this play where he went up for the ball and Joe Hayden absolutely leveled him. And Marquise Brown then missed the next 2 games with an ankle injury. Gus Edwards had 1 reception for 6 yards and Mark Ingram, 2 for 5. But it was enough to get the job done while the Ravens did struggle to move the ball somewhat on offense. Luckily for the Ravens, the Steelers did not have great quarterback play themselves. Mason Rudolph finished 13 of 20 for 131 yards, 1 touchdown, and no interceptions before getting knocked out, literally knocked out by Earl Thomas on a play where he collided with Mason Rudolph's helmet and absolutely knocked him out. He fell cold to the turf. It was one of the scarier things I've seen on a football field, especially, you know, seeing it live on TV and being there. I'm sure it was unbelievable to see a guy slump out on the field. Mason Rudolph did not have the best luck with helmets this year. I'll leave it at that. But Devlin Hodges came into the game and actually moved the ball pretty well, all things considered. He finished 7 of 9 for 68 yards. It actually seemed to be carving the Ravens defense up a decent amount. James Conner finished with 14 carries for 55 yards and a touchdown. Hodges himself had 2 carries for 20 yards, and Jalen Samuels, 3 carries for 2 yards. In the receiving game, Juju Smith-Schuster had 7 receptions for 75 yards and a touchdown. James Washington had 3 for 52. Vance McDonald, 3 for 34. Deontay Johnson had 5 receptions for 28 yards, and Jalen Samuels, 3 receptions for 11 yards, but it was the play of the day for Marlon Humphrey on Juju Smith-Schuster. Earlier in the game, he gave up a touchdown where he was going for the ball and actually ended up yielding a touchdown to Smith-Schuster because he did not wrap up and tackle well. If Humphrey didn't go for the ball in overtime when Juju Smith-Schuster caught that pass from Devlin Hodges, the Ravens might not have had a win in Pittsburgh. They might have actually lost that game. Humphrey went for the ball, made a beautiful punch out, and Josh Bynes actually couldn't come over and recover the football. So Marlon Humphrey got up and did it himself. He forced the fumble, was on the ground, got up, and recovered it all in the same play. An absolute effort by him, and Justin Tucker made the game winner to help the Ravens go home with a win, defeating the Pittsburgh Steelers again 26-23. On defense, Patrick Owusu led the team in tackles, followed by Maurice Kennedy. Fernell McPhee had 6 tackles and a sack. Josh Bynes, the newly acquired Raven at the time, 5 tackles. Michael Pierce had 4. Humphrey Judon had 3. And Chuck Clark, Gus Edwards, Earl Thomas, and Brandon Williams each had 2. And then LJ Fort had 1 for the Ravens. But boy, you talk about an immediate impact. Josh Bynes and LJ Fort. Veteran presence, experience, and just knowing where to be in certain situations, knowing that they need to be in certain spots on certain plays. It's just something that you really can't teach. And I mean, there are certain things that obviously veterans are there to teach the younger guys, but until you're in that situation, until you've had that experience, it can be tough for younger guys to fully grasp onto, okay, well, I have the skills and I have the intangibles and I have the physical traits and I have the instincts, but until they've actually had these experiences, and that's what we saw with the Ravens in the playoffs, experiences are good for this team. Losing experiences fuel young teams, and this is a game of football where you have to be on top of everything on every single play. If you're just a step late, if your arm is just an inch away from a carry, this is a game of inches, right? You can miss out on a guy by literally a fingertip, and they can break a tackle and go the distance. You have to be able to have the experiences, and Josh Bynes proved that. He had an interception on Jalen Samuels on a kind of wildcat trickery play that they pulled, and Josh Bynes sniffed it out and was in the right spot at the right time to make the play. Bynes and Fort showed that knack throughout the entire season, and we saw it with Marcus Peters and Domantas Peko, Justin Ellis. Veterans who were able to teach the young guys, and we even saw the young guys improve to a degree. Now, not every single guy did improve, but this was the start of something for this Ravens defense, something to really help them understand that they have the pieces to do it. It's just a matter of adjusting to the new guys in the locker room and getting over the old guys who were departed at the time. Now, this was a game where Tony Jefferson went down with a torn ACL and an injury that was really devastating for him. Jefferson is a leader in that locker room, and while his time in Baltimore hasn't lived up to his or probably the Ravens' standards, he's still a very good guy in the locker room to have a leader and a veteran who, again, can be in those experiences and know exactly where to be. This was the game, we'll talk about this next week. Chuck Clark then moves up to play strong safety. Deshaun Elliott comes up as well, and they really wanted to see Deshaun Elliott in that strong safety role while Chuck Clark played more dime linebacker. That did not go well, and not because they didn't perform well, because Deshaun Elliott in the game against Cincinnati got injured, was out for the season, thus Chuck Clark made the move to full-time safety with the green dot, and Brandon Carr moved to the dime linebacker role while also playing cornerback. Really a jack of all trades for Baltimore, but this Pittsburgh game I think had a lot more to do with the Ravens' success than the people give it credit for. While the offense didn't perform very well, it gave the team in general confidence that we can go beat a division rival while having new pieces, and they just gelled really well together, I feel like, after this game. And it's important to understand that overtime wins are not easy to come by in the NFL. Wins in general are not easy to come by in the NFL. The Ravens were able to do it 12 straight times, and there's nothing you can take away from this Ravens team in the regular season. They had an exceptional run, and it was fueled by this game in Pittsburgh. But that's all I have for you today. Tomorrow we are going to be getting into more Ravens news and talk, so stay tuned, and I will see you tomorrow.